Hey there. It's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Kind of a normal-ish day around here. I mean, getting normal, more normal at least. There's people in the building. We haven't seen many of them. They operate in a different sphere, the hockey people, because it's opening day in the National Hockey League today.
But it's not just that. So there's a couple of ways this normalized. Number one, there are people actually in the physical space, which there weren't for months and months and months and months, right? Mm-hmm. So that also our hockey brothers and sisters have relocated here from the CBC.
Yes.
Right? They were down on Front Street for, they've been down there for several years, and now the new hockey studio is going to open on Bloor Street here. And,
have you seen it?
I have not. They won't let me in. Okay, so I tried to look through the window.
If you can't get in, I have no shot.
No, there's no, they're very secretive. But so yeah, that's very exciting. So they're all, yeah, so those folks are above us now. They are on, they're five floors above us doing their hockey stuff. So, which is great because we got David Amber coming in today and he's actually going to be here.
Yeah.
With us, which is very cool.
Yeah, physical in studio guest. I'm very, very excited about being physically intimidated by David Amber, which he tends to do because he's very strong. And he works out a lot. But yeah, a doubleheader of games to start the NHL season, Penguins and Lightning. You know, I saw this crazy stat, and we'll get into this a little bit more, like you mentioned, with David at 6 o'clock. Sportsnet Stats, which is a great Twitter follow. Again, one of the positives in the, we do these positives and negatives of you not being on Twitter. This would be one of the positives, okay. But then I can just relay it to you. So
yes,
it's no
that's
big
all
deal.
I need. I just need intermediaries. That's all I need.
That's what I'm here for. Tonight will be the Penguins' first season opener since 2000 that did not have either Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, or Mario Lemieux in the lineup. And, of course, Crosby not out long-term. I think he had a wrist surgery in the offseason, and he's kind of day-to-day. Malkin's going to be out for a while with the knee thing, but it's kind of wild.
It is, and it's, you know, a lot of people have been talking. It's been interesting going into the season because, you know, my pal Mr. Burke, our pal Mr. Burke, when he went down there last year, like before he went, but he was still one of us, you know, Brian was pretty forthright talking about the Penguins saying, like, window's closed. They've got to rethink this thing. It's not you can't reset with the guys they've got and make a run at a Stanley Cup. And then, you know, he went down there and took the gig, and him and Ron Hextall, and he said, well, maybe it's open a little bit, right? So, but there's a lot of folks though heading into this season saying it's over, that they can't get back there, and you know, how do you turn the page on an unbelievable era in Pittsburgh Penguins hockey, right? And they, you know, they did have the ability to run it back and run it back, and they didn't win every year, but they won a lot. And what does the post, well, certainly the post Malkin era, but the post Malkin and Sid era look like in Pittsburgh? It's kind of hard to contemplate. It's been such a long, glorious run, right? But you know, we'll see when they actually start playing hockey. I say neither guy will be in the lineup tonight. I guess we'll see what they look like over the first 25 or 30 games in the season.
Yeah, you can't rebuild when those guys are on the roster.
No, you cannot. There's not much you can do at all.
No, and yeah, it's, man, talk about, oh, maybe a downturn in Penguins hockey. Well, I mean, they just won their division.
They did.
In a weird season a year ago, and Sidney Crosby was pretty good racking up points in the games that he played. They won a Stanley Cup in 2017, which isn't 100 years ago. They've made the playoffs every year since. But yeah, the expectations, as long as you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and they're healthy, which is, I guess, the big caveat, you want to do more than just make the playoffs.
Yeah, and there's going to be a point here where that's not going to be, you know, that you're going to have to take a detour. And they've had been able to write those two names in at the beginning of every season. And, you know, like Sid's durability is going to be, you know, one of the things when we look back on his career is just going to be how, you know, how long he's played at a very high level, how long he's been able to kind of keep that team at a very high level. You know, there's always a new, you know, there's a new star. There are new people we talk about as the best players in hockey, and he just keeps going.
Yeah.
Right. He's, you know, he has had injuries over the years, but you know, his kind of run of, you know, consistency kind of understates it because it makes it sound like he's just a plugger, but consistent at a very high level for a very long time. It's an unbelievable run.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not Brian Burke. I will never be in charge of a National Hockey League franchise, but if it were me, I mean, I don't turn that roster over. I don't even think about, you know, tanking or not taking my giving my best effort to win every single season until Sidney Crosby has retired. And there's never, not that Brian Burke is ever considering this, there's never a moment where you move him off the roster. It's just,
no.
You got to take your lumps. If it's a 5-year period after Sidney Crosby's gone where you're not very good and you're accumulating assets and draft picks and then revamping for the generation beyond that, that's the way it's got to be. You had a pretty damn good run with Sidney Crosby.
Well, and I don't think you ever want to see him wearing another uniform at the end of his career.
Oh, hell no.
For any reason, right? Remember when he doesn't need, he's not going to be one of those guys, he doesn't have to do the Ray Bourque, I have to go somewhere else to win a Stanley Cup thing.
Oh, right? Still one of the most pathetic things ever is bringing the cup back to Boston.
Yeah, yeah, it's...
Back when Boston was not title town.
Yeah, that's there was that. But that... He doesn't have to do that. He's got his cups, right? So
yep.
he doesn't have to go somewhere for late. I mean, but look at with the cap, and especially with the flat cap, the next however many years it's going to be flat, they're going to have to maneuver. It's going to be tricky. But I would say that, yeah, I would agree that he is the given until he doesn't want to play hockey anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Mario was the given until he didn't want to play hockey anymore.
Yep.
Those two guys, if they go through that long stretch of their history, which encompasses those two players, and neither of those two players ever wear any uniform other than a Pittsburgh uniform, that's quite something. Like how often are we going to see that? And never mind in hockey and in professional sport.
No, and especially in a salary cap league, which that is now. No, it's totally bizarre. You can watch them play the defending Stanley Cup champions as the Lightning raise their banner to the rafters on Sportsnet at 7:30 tonight. And again, we'll talk to David Amber. We'll get back into hockey at 6:00. Bizarre day watching sports yesterday. Another good day of sports watching.
Yes.
We got the baseball, we got the football, and the football game looked like it was going to be a blowout. And then it wasn't. Went to overtime, but it was a surreal moment before that, before Lamar Jackson was setting all kinds of franchise marks and leading his third, fourth quarter comeback of the season already. It's week 5. Adam Schefter broke into programming.
Yes.
On ESPN Monday Night Football, the program that John Gruden used to work on, and announced that John Gruden had resigned as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders after email surfaced during a workplace misconduct investigation involving the Washington football team. Over 500,000 emails were involved in that investigation. The investigation was closed, I guess, last summer, and Daniel Snyder and the Washington football team were ordered to pay a $10 million fine, but as it stands right now, Gruden, not fired, is no longer the head coach in Las Vegas, and the sporting world coming to grips with what just happened over the last couple of days.
Boy, there's so many. We're going to get into this today, Ben, obviously, but there's so many layers to this thing. I was reading the Gruden emails beyond the Demoris, starting with the Demoris Smith ones, but then more and more and more and more. One of the things... we all know a guy like that, right? Like,
of course.
I've sat in a bar next to a guy like that. They're not quite as visible and vocal as they might have been in other times in history, but we all know exactly what kind of guy John Gruden is, right? That's, he was revealed in all of, in all of his glory through those emails. They couldn't be more revealing of what kind of person he is. And you can, there was a 4-person loop, that one email loop with the president, then president of the Washington football team, the guy, the Hooters guy,
yep.
and a fourth guy. You could hear them kind of slapping each other on the back, telling each other, making each other laugh and having a grand old time over that stuff through email. It rang. Some bad bells. If anybody, I say we all know that guy. And that guy, for many, many years has been in positions of power, not just in sport, but in business. They've been able to get away with that stuff, right? You could be that guy and be the boss. Absolutely. The world's changed. And I'm glad the world's changed. It's a good thing the world's changed. So there's that. Like John Gruden, you might have thought he was a blowhard on as a coach or on Monday Night Football. You might have liked or not liked his takes on football. But if you read those emails, he is revealed in his fullness and his lack of character. So that's unequivocal, black and white, 100%. The Los Angeles Raiders, different organization in sport. They did, you kind of forget that that Al Davis hired Art Schell, first black head coach in the modern National Football League, you know, since Fritz Pollard back in the 20s. We had Amy Trask on here the other day, hired Amy Trask, had a woman working in his front office years and years and years before anybody else in professional sport had a woman working in their front office. A progressive, you know, in its own way, you know, an odd organization because it was built around one guy, but, you know, and he took on his own league, testified for the USFL in the antitrust suit. He kind of played the whole rebel game, but they, you know, did some things that were progressive in that organization. And then they go out, or his son goes out and courts this guy who also worked for Al, but, you know, before he worked for, I just was thinking about Amy Trask, who we had on the show, and, you know, how people like her are processing this today. But the third part, and we'll, you know, as you say, this came out of an investigation of the Washington Football Team. An enormous number of emails exchanged among a whole bunch of different people, going right up to Dan Snyder, presumably the president of that team. There was an oral report presented there was no written report, an oral report presented behind closed doors that resulted in a $10 million fine to the Washington Football Team. And then the only thing that trickles out, and I have zero sympathy for John Gruden. I'm glad we know who he is. But the only thing that trickles out are those emails about John Gruden emails. Like, it doesn't even really, you know, like, we're not even talking about Bruce Allen today, who was one of the other guys on the email chain,
it's
right?
Unbelievable. It's you think John Gruden would have signed up for the confidentiality of not having his email released if it was just a $10 million fine? I think he might have wanted to have his career continue if that was the choice given to him. It was, of course, not. And again, because it's reached the light of day, you know what, the ends justifies the means in this case, that we understand who John Gruden is. You think Dan Snyder was a complete innocent? Well, obviously he wasn't. He paid a $10 million fine. This investigation was done in such a manner, and there is a report that the NFLPA is pressing the league to divulge more information about that investigation. This investigation was done, and the emails were not released under the guise of protecting some of the confidential emails the confidentiality of the people that were involved in the emails. But that's specifically the people Roger Goodell and the NFL wanted to protect. That's an owner?
Yes.
And perhaps, you know, another executive who he didn't have an axe out for? He had an axe out for John Gruden. And again, John Gruden seems pretty scummy.
He's a jerk. Yeah, no, he's a creep. He's a racist. He's a misogynist. He is a homophobe. He is all of those labels. He has defined himself through these emails.
But, no doubt. Yeah, but he insulted Roger Goodell explicitly.
Yes, he did.
And he used a homophobic slur to do that.
Over and over again.
Repeatedly. There has to be a connection to the personal animus between the commissioner of the National Football League and the former head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, who sent these emails not in that capacity, as a member of the media, as the color commentator on ESPN Monday Night Football. But there it just feels like there's more to go here. And I to the point about the Raiders also,
yes,
which should be stated, and with so much information, I understand how people could miss this. The Raiders were given all the information that we got yesterday. They were given last week,
and they didn't. Yes, and behind closed, they were given it, without it being disclosed to the public. Correct. So they knew it.
Yep,
and they did not act.
Mike Florio reported a Pro Football Talk that the NFL was pushing for the Raiders to do the thing that they eventually did not have to do because John Gruden fell on his own sword.
Yeah, I wonder if that's semantics, and I wonder about who gets paid and how much he gets paid and all of that stuff. But yes, they gave the Raiders the opportunity to get rid of him without this ever going public, correct?
Yes. They wanted, the league wanted the Raiders to fire John Gruden last week before he got to the sideline on Sunday. And the Raiders, boy, they looked distracted and weird. And I wonder why.
Yeah.
Post facto. But this organization that, like you said, was one of the most progressive in all of North American pro sports looks clownish today.
Yeah, and I just to complete it, because people will listening to that will say, will point this out. The same organization under Mark Davis avoided the Rooney Rule. You know, you're supposed to interview minority candidates for head coaching jobs. They just ignored that in the hiring of Gruden the second time around. They completely end ran it. When they hired Mike Mayock as the general manager, they did the same thing. They didn't you know, they barely even gave lip service to minority candidates for those jobs. So yes, for the old, there's the Al Davis legacy, the Archell legacy and all of that. But, you know, in this case, they didn't do any, even the basic stuff that you're supposed to do, you know, kind of go through the motions of the Rooney Rule before hiring him, because Mark Davis, for, you know, whatever reason, you know, so desired John Gruden as the coach and was willing to pay him anything and didn't want to be distracted by the league rule that mandates that you give a fair shot to minority candidates. So
I think they're going to follow that rule
back in the day, not so much now.
Yeah, I think that rule is going to be very much adhered to this offseason when they go through their hiring practice.
Yeah, I'd say, but it is, it, you know, there's a weird, like, I just feel like we have just barely dipped our toe into this.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to talk to Christine Brennan of USA Today in the back half of this hour and get her response to this and her feeling on where this is going. You cannot, because those 650,000 emails existed before John Gruden's emails were released. And it was, the NFL accomplished what it set out to do,
mm-hmm.
to slap Dan Snyder on the wrist and to have people kind of forget about it. I'd forgotten about it. I had to go back and reread that stuff.
Well, I think they released released the result. What is it? Was in August? I think it was
July, August, yeah, sometime
kind of
in the summer.
A quiet day,
right?
And of course, as I say, there was no report released to the public. The idea of an oral report after doing, you know, going through that amount of data and then having somebody just stand up in a meeting and say, "Here's what we found," and not without any kind of accountability to your consumer base, your fan base, to anybody, really. It's an interesting way of doing business. But then this last, having the shoe drop the way it did with Gruden is fascinating. Like, and it just demands, you know, when you try and cover stuff up, it's generally history would suggest it's a bad idea.
It is. But they almost got away with it.
They did.
Here's what it looks like. And we're just, what it looks like is they got away with it, but Roger Goodell still wanted to have his vengeance against John Gruden and thought, this won't have any lasting implications beyond John Gruden being humiliated, embarrassed, and forced out of his position. But what I think it's going to do, and maybe not, like, maybe again, we have such a short memory on these things and something bright and shiny will grab our attention next. But I'm fixated on the 650,000 emails and getting back into that and understanding who else is scum of the earth level John Gruden stuff.
Well, because none of this actually is relevant in terms of, except that, other than the fact that Bruce Allen was part of a kind of a creepy email loop.
Yeah.
This actually doesn't play to the whole thing about harassment and the culture within the Washington football team at all. This is peripheral, right?
Yep.
This is,
so he wasn't even employed by the NFL when he was sending these emails.
So I'm thinking in those other hundreds of thousands of emails, there's the stuff that in theory cost the Washington football team $10 million.
No kidding.
Yeah, so there's got to be some stuff in there. But this, you're right about, like, I guess had the Raiders just fired John Gruden out of the blue last week, it would have been interesting. People would have presumably asked some questions.
Maybe they, and yeah, we would have just had the Demoris Smith thing. And you know what? Mike Tirico and Tony Dungy came on our television sets as they were trying to kill an hour of a rain delay on a Sunday night football game. And they defended the man.
They did.
And since they have recanted and understood that there's just no defending the scattershot offending every single human being on planet Earth that has followed.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Raiders had done what it seems like the NFL had pushed them to do and just fired him out of a cannon on Friday as the result of what was an abhorrent comment towards Demoris Smith, I don't think we're here today having this conversation.
I don't think that those other emails are leaked. Yeah, I think that is a fair conclusion. So that they decided that they needed to further force their hand. But by doing so, again, I open themselves up to a level of scrutiny that I think, like, John Gruden had it's been a bad week for John Gruden, deservedly. Mm-hmm. But boy, I think the National Football League is going to go through some rough seas here in the next little while.
It's going to be very, very interesting to see. And again, we'll talk to Christine Brennan in about 10 minutes' time. I do want to touch a little bit on the baseball game yesterday.
Yes.
Those Red Sox and their fan base that you so love.
Yes, it's so nice to see them happy, isn't it? Isn't it so nice? Wait, let's start with one. Would you have walked Kike Hernandez and loaded the bases?
I might have.
I would have.
Here,
I'm not just saying that in hindsight. I know you got Devers coming up, but still.
Devers has been injured. I mean, he had a big home run in that game, but he's looked Like, he's dealing with some sort of ailment throughout that series, and it's incredible testament to whatever that he's able to get through it and put on a brave face and actually come up with some clutch hits. But who's the more dangerous guy? And what I keep coming around to is the terminology around Kike Hernandez is he just seems like a winning player. Kike Hernandez seems like a winning player. He can play all over the diamond. He can work a walk. He just feels like a winning player. That's not the guy I want beating.
No, and I don't almost don't care who it is coming up behind him. I just think, and look, Kike Hernandez, you know, had the big game the night before, the game before, but I just think in that circumstance, you know, maybe I'm sure there's a higher level of analytics that, you know, Kevin Cash is privy to that I'm not.
Yeah.
But I want a force play. I want the possibility of a force play there. I want the possibility of a double play there to get the hell out of that inning.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think with the base open, there's no good reason to leave that base open to me in that circumstance. You know, when it's a tie game and, you know, there's less than two out, I don't think you can possibly leave that base open. You get a strikeout there, I guess you're in great shape. Then maybe you walk Devers. I don't know. But I walk Kike. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of it, you know, like I know, you know, it's frustrating from a Blue Jays fan point of view to say, boy, we could have been there. You know, that this is the same team that lost, what, two games to the Orioles in the last week and was down 5-1 to the Washington Nationals. We could have done as what these guys did. But if you're the Yankees, you're thinking, how, you know, geez, we lost this one game and now we're, but how about the Rays? How about the Rays? 100 wins.
Yeah.
You know, the smartest kids in class.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know, it didn't work.
No, it didn't. And yeah, the worst argument being made today and smart people aren't making it is that it's a, you know, the nerds are taking it. There's nerds everywhere. Everybody's a nerd. If you're in a front office in Major League Baseball, you're working off of perhaps slightly different information.
And I'm sorry, but the people running the world right now, yeah, it's pretty nerd heavy. I got to tell you,
it's true.
Like it or not.
Here's the thing. They did this, this shocking thing. An historic thing, the Rays started three rookies to start this series, and that seemed so good. And both had varying levels of success, but in the overall, their numbers were horrible. Shane McClanahan, Shane Boz, Drew Rasmussen did not get the job done. And I think, frankly, if there's one takeaway I'm going to have, it's that there is still something different about playing in Tampa in August, as opposed to playing at Fenway Park in October. It's not everything. And some players, young, like Wander Franco, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy's going to be a problem for however long the Rays hold on to him before they sell him off for spare parts and get the next Wander Franco. Randy Arozarena, right out of the gates, he was awesome. But it's not for everybody.
Nope.
And those guys didn't look at all like the guys that we saw during the regular season.
Plus they ran are like 8 or 9 pitchers yesterday, right? Like, yep. It seemed kind of, I know they fell behind in that game and Eduardo Rodriguez was good, which I didn't expect.
No.
But it's, you know, Kevin Cash was managing like his hair was on fire, which is what he can do. And again, they fell behind and they tied the game up. So, you know, if they win the game, I guess we all think Kevin Cash managed his way out of a deep hole and they're going home with a chance to win the series. But I think it'll be interesting picking through this one because I think we all thought that the Rays had a real chance to win the World Series, that they certainly had a chance to win the American League. And that when you step back from that in a year like this, they'll have some guys back next year. And now they also have some, you know, arbitration. They have a lot of arb stuff. They're going to have to take on payroll. They'll probably have to move some payroll because of the way they operate. But as you say, Wander Franco looks like, player for the ages right now. Looks like, you know, he looks like one of those, another of these incredibly great young players that are in the game right now. But can you do, you know, what they just did again and win 100 games in the America, playing in the American League East? Like I'm skeptical. Like I think they had, like, I'm not saying this is kind of a 1 in a million opportunity because they run it back every year, yeah, in a certain way and they are really smart, but that is not where I thought this thing was going to hit the rocks.
Well, and I would say, it's, to me, it's not a referendum on what the Tampa Bay Rays have been able to accomplish over the last half decade to a decade. It's still incredible. It's unbelievable. And they did make a World Series a season ago, and they won 100 games. Also, this is that baseball is a sample size sport, and four games or possibly five, and seven is a bigger sample than a one in a wild card game. But you get to the postseason in baseball, and it becomes a little bit more of a coin flip. I mean, who anticipated one of the worst defensive teams in the American League, the Boston Red Sox, not out defending the Rays, but the Rays defense letting them down in the deciding inning there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. The skip ball to first base.
And Franco commits the error to the leadoff man
to open
get
the
on.
Door, right? Yeah, that's right. So two plays in that last inning, right?
Yep.
That is true. And you know, maybe if it's the best of seven series, we're having a different conversation.
Maybe.
I just wonder about, you know, and again, maybe it's just a traditionalist security blanket, but the idea of starting pitching in the playoffs and having guys that, you know, that those three guys in a short series that you can trot out there and assume are going to maybe do even more than go twice through the lineup.
It's still important if you can do it.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think it makes your life easier. I just think it's really hard.
Yes.
To do what they do.
Yes.
It's really hard. And maybe it was the part of what happened last night was it was just too hard.
Yeah. But I don't doubt that they'll be back. And you know what? Those rookies that had a bit of a blip in that playoff series, maybe they'll be better next year when they have a whole year to acclimatize to Major League Baseball. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Christine Brennan of USA Today as we get back into this John Gruden story. It is the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
It's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunton. Again, I'm sure you've seen the news. It was the top headline on CNN for a brief moment yesterday. John Gruden resigning as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders after a bunch of his emails released where he offended absolutely everybody on planet Earth. Let's talk to Christine Brennan of USA Today, who's kind enough to join us. How's it going, Christine? Thanks for doing this.
Hey, well, thank you, Ben and Stephen. Great to be with you guys. Everything's going fine down here. In that little country to the south of you guys. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing all right. We just had our Thanksgiving. So yes, we're still recovering and, happy early Thanksgiving. That's very early, but,
yes. Oh, that's okay. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well. It is like my favorite holiday. So I think we should have two. We should celebrate yours. You should celebrate ours.
I agree wholeheartedly. I have an American wife, so I do celebrate both.
Excellent.
So where is this thing going, Christine? What is next?
With this whole awful and appalling John Gruden scandal, there are hundreds of thousands of emails, and what's in them, you know? And is it just Gruden, or are there emails that will show some of the same kind of bigotry and hatred and misogyny, racism from other big names in the NFL? Is it, how widespread is it? What is it, you know, how deep is it? Is this the tip of the iceberg? All of that and more. The thing that struck me most of all about all of this, I mean, I'm sure your listeners have heard a lot, or at least snippets, they know how awful this is. You know, there's people out there, oh, it's cancel culture. Well, no, an employer is allowed if they don't want someone around. I mean, that's what business is all about. So it's the opposite of cancel culture. It's a company making a decision for its company. In this case, it was the Raiders saying, you know, and Gruden then resigning, obviously, versus being fired. But consider this. The NFL is riding high, right? It's the biggest, you know, sports league. It's the biggest league in the United States. It's certainly our national pastime. Football is not baseball. As much as I love baseball, you know, it's football. It's the NFL, and it controls television ratings. It's huge. Super Bowl is, of course, you know, one of the big holidays of the year, that kind of thing. And the NFL right now is thriving. Will the NFL be thriving, say, in 50 years? You know who's going to be determining if the NFL is thriving in 50 years? Young people today, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, who, you know, by then the 50 and 60-year-olds, the John Grudens of the world, me, maybe, you know, you guys, I don't know, will all be gone, right? So who's left? It's younger people. It's people of color. It's women. You know, right now the fan base of the NFL is 45% women. Women and girls, 45%. That's pretty close to 50-50. It will be people of color. It will be a diverse background and a diverse population, just like the United States is going to be a majority-minority country in the next, I think, 15 years or so. That's the future. And John Gruden, with his awful words, basically disparaged and denigrated absolutely everyone and everything that the NFL needs to be a successful business in the next 40, 50, 60 years. Brilliant, huh? Brilliant. I mean, it's absolutely awful as a business strategy and as a human being walking planet Earth. It's despicable. What an awful person we have found out that John Gruden is, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, unequivocally. That's absolutely true. There's so many ways, there's so many things about, so many elements of the story, though, Christine. I guess, like, I want to just step back a second here because, you, as you said, you know, the NFL is riding high. It's the most successful sports entertainment business in the world. They investigated one of their own franchises, the Washington Football Team, for its toxic workplace. They managed to kind of get, you know, they got through that. They fined them $10 million, but the report was delivered orally in a closed room. There was no written report. There was nothing that came out to the public or to the press or to the fans about what the specifics were. All we knew was that that they fined the team. Dan Snyder stepped aside and handed it to his wife for a little while. And they're, so they're through that in terms of the public relations fiasco that it might have been to a large degree. Like, it's, again, a lot of people, you know, probably have pretty strong feelings about Dan Snyder and the Washington Football Team. But how does this get, how do we end up at a point where these emails about specific to one guy out of the hundreds of thousands, you know, one really crappy guy, you know, a really horrible guy, but these get leaked to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and it turns into the John Gruden story. How do we get there?
Well, my sense is someone in the NFL wanted them leaked, right? Wanted to give them to someone. So it's so bad, right, that Gruden's so bad that there's someone who says, we want this out. For all we know, it's someone high up in the NFL says, get these out there so that we can get rid of Gruden, right? I mean, I don't, you know, we have no idea, but that's what leaks are. Leaks are actually a very good thing. Richard Nixon would be seen as a fine two-term president if there were no leaks, because there would have been no Watergate. I think the former guy, I'm here in D.C., about 4 miles from the White House, and the former guy that lived there, as Joe Biden aptly calls him, did such damage to our country. And one of the things that he did was make it seem as if, like, the press doing its job is a bad thing. And the press doing its job is a great thing for all of us. Doesn't mean there aren't bad journalists, like there's bad doctors and bad lawyers, of course, bad police officers, bad, you know, whomever. But there's also, you know, a great journalist. And so what it looks like to me, I have no inside info. If I did, believe me, I'd tell you, if I had inside info, I would have probably broken the story because someone would have given it to me. But and that's fine. I mean, all kudos to the Times and Wall Street Journal for having the story first, different parts of it. But that's how this works. Someone tips you off to something. And so as far as leadership, I'll pose this. I've known Roger Goodell since we were in our early 20s. I like him personally. I've been very critical of him over the years. We're not friends per se, but we've known each other a long time as a journalist and as someone in the league, as he is. Why didn't he bring these out and say, we're having a press conference, and here's what we found that John Gruden said, and John Gruden, you can never be involved with the NFL again. Now, that would have been leadership, right?
Yep.
Instead of leaking it, not, you know, because obviously the NFL had these emails. So all of this came in that investigation of the Washington Football Team, and toxic workplace is right. Sexual harassment, verbal and sexual assault allegations, it's awful. Dan Snyder should have been forced to sell the team. He shouldn't just have been, you know, shoved away for a few months while his wife runs the team. It's awful. Awful decision-making by the NFL. And the emails, many of them went to Bruce Allen, then the team president, who's the son of the great George Allen, the football team's coach for years, and brother of George Allen Jr., whatever he is, was senator for years, U.S. senator from Virginia, and ran for governor in Virginia, I believe. Yeah, pretty sure of that. And I know George Allen, that George Allen, and the younger one. And, you know, I'm appalled on that for him and appalled that his brother would speak that way and accept these things. Because the comfort level here, let's be clear, John Gruden isn't writing these emails if he doesn't feel it's totally acceptable to write them.
Oh, yeah. No,
and
I want to, I'm all for leaks and I'm all for whistleblowers. Believe me. And Lord knows, you know, the free press. And that's, you know, and it's a service to have this stuff to see the light of day for a variety of reasons. But I keep thinking for reasons that, you know, and among those hundreds of thousands of emails, I'm guessing there's a whole bunch of horrible people. You know, I'm just a guess here, including the three guys, you know, who were exchanging emails with John Gruden and, you know, presumably sending him LOLs after all of his bombos, right? So it's interesting to me that, yeah, the league probably wanted John Gruden out. And that's a good, I get it. I would want John Gruden out of my league too. But it seems very specific considering I'm guessing there's a lot of dirty laundry in there involving a lot of people.
I'm guessing there is too. It's possible there's one particular person. Maybe it was a black person. Maybe it was a woman that had access to these emails that was correctly so infuriated more than others. I mean, I'm just guessing. Is it possible the old boys network went all the way up into the NFL, you know, leadership and they thought, this isn't good. And maybe there were, you know, a couple other people that had access to it that realized how bad it was and leaked them, you know, which would be appropriate because the whole, obviously this is the only people that were not being offended and offended isn't even the right word. I know you used it. I just used it. This is just wrong, yeah. Right? It's not like, I mean, I'm offended by it. You're offended by it. All of your listeners hopefully are offended by it, but that's not even that, that puts it on the reader of the emails or the object of the emails. Let's just say in our culture in 2021, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. If it offends one person or a million, it doesn't matter. It's wrong to say it. And, you know, I get all the time, if you're offended by this, sorry. Oh, give me a break. Mm-hmm. I'm offended by nothing at this point in my career. It's just wrong to say it, right? It's just wrong to use the R word for the old, you know, the Washington football team thing. Wrong. It offends everyone, maybe. Who cares about that? It's initially, it's wrong. And there's right and wrong. And so, yeah, maybe that's how it happened. I guess if there's five bank robbers and they catch one, we're for that, right? I'm yay, they got one. And I'm not obviously equating this with bank robbery in any way. That's two entirely separate things. But I think you get my analogy. There's four out there that we don't know about yet, but maybe they'll get all four.
Yeah.
They'll get all five eventually, right? So if this is one, my guess is we will find out about more of the bad guys in these emails.
Well, I'm curious about that because this investigation wrapped up over the summer and the punishment was handed down, the $10 million. And I guess it was announced at that time that there were 650,000 emails that were culled through by the investigators at that moment. Now I feel like the appetite to uncover the rest of those is much greater than it was months and months ago. Do you get a sense, Christine, because the NFL, I guess, is under no obligation to uncover those emails, that the public demand, and perhaps not just the public. There was a report today that the NFLPA is going to make a request to uncover the rest of those emails, that there'll be enough pressure put on the league that they will have to divulge some of the rest of the more than a half million other emails.
Yes, I do. And in fact, on the CNN appearance I did earlier today on this, I said that. I mean, that's what leadership would be. For the NFL to come out and, I mean, you can't get in front of it because when the moving train has already, like, gone through the station and passed this, left the station and gone, like, 10 miles down the road, you can't get in front of that moving train. That's where the NFL is with this story. But at least you can jump onto the caboose and try to be a part of it. So, yeah, I think the NFL should, what I think is Roger Goodell or others should come forward, have a press conference, and literally air all the dirty laundry, you know, to call it what one might call it, and tell us about everyone, and how bad is it? Now, I'm sure Roger Goodell's not going to do that. If it is as bad as we think it is, then I mean, does it involve other owners? Does it bring down you know, 10 other people? You know, is it every team, right? Is it leadership in every team laughing and yucking it up over homophobic, racist, misogynistic slurs of the very people you are trying to attract to your product? And, you know, that's what I'm going back to.
Yeah.
Is that you want to grow. You want to continue to be the big cheese. You're the NFL. If you over time push women away and black people away, and by the way, your league's 70% black, so that is beyond stupid on every level, much less respecting your players, and gay people. If you want to push all them away, well, then if they're not turning on an NFL game, there's no NFL anymore, right? Now, that sounds dramatic, and it's not happening tomorrow, and it may not happen even for 10 years. But the old geezers who hate Colin Kaepernick, they're going to be gone in 20, 30 years. You know, the vast chunk of those people who are now in their 50s, 60s, 70s. And the 20-year-olds who love Colin Kaepernick and just snapped up his jerseys as fast as they could when Nike put him on and loved the campaign about Kaepernick a few years ago, those 20-year-olds are going to be around for another 50, 60 years. They're your future season ticket holders, your future viewers, buying the products that you see on advertised, et cetera, clicking on the streaming service, whatever it's all going to be, in the hologram in front of your eyes, wherever it's going to be over the next 50, 60 years. That's your future. You alienate them, and all of a sudden, you are not number one anymore. And we've seen it happen with baseball, with boxing, with track and field, tennis ebbs and flows, with sports that were on top of the world, like boxing or track and field, right? Oh, they're a shell of themselves now. And for whatever reasons, track and field, steroids, of course, and you can't trust it, and you can't believe it. And on and on it goes. So that can happen to a league. It's not going to happen in the NFL overnight. And I like pro football, and I love college football too. But the point is, that's the damage here. But I think we need to know in one way or another, drip, drip, or do it all at once. Yeah. I think we're going to find out a lot more.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do that. When the first email, when the Damore Smith thing came out, the original, before the second load up email, there were a lot of people, you know, in football and on the broadcast stood up, said, "I know John Gruden. He's not that kind of guy. I'm shocked to see that this is John Gruden." I was saying to Ben when we started the show today, you know, like when you read those emails, we've all met guys like this, right? Like we all know people like that. We have heard it, you know, it's hard, you know, I don't think you have a secret life as that guy. I think that's who you are. Are you surprised that, you know, more people didn't stand up like, you know, like, well, Keyshawn stood up, you know, and said that, you know, this guy's a fraud and he's always been a fraud. Keyshawn Johnson did, but that more people didn't kind of say, yeah, that's who he is. That's who this person is.
I guess I'm a little bit surprised that guys like Mike Tirico, who I've known forever, or Tony Dungy, or people like that, in both cases, black men, I'm a little surprised that they just so quickly leaped to his defense. Because if we've learned anything through Me Too, right, whoever it is you're defending, if we've learned anything, it's that you really don't know where the story's going. And yes, you know the guy, in this case Gruden, but do you know what he emailed, right? So they look, you know, it's unfortunate. As I said, I've known Mike and liked Mike Tirico, but it's just a terrible look for those guys and anyone else who jumped in and defended him. And yeah, I mean, I think what happened there clearly is people just, I don't want to say there's two Mike or two John Grudens. There's one John Gruden, but clearly he had, of course, he treated Mike Tirico with respect, right? But then if there's a guy that doesn't have Mike Tirico standing, right, or a woman who's black, obviously from the emails, we can see how much fun he makes of them and how he puts them down and how racist he is. So isn't that kind of the age-old issue there a little bit of like, well, I like you, but, you know, you're fine, but not the entire class of people who looks like you. And that is, of course, also absolutely despicable and appalling.
Christine, this has been great and very enlightening. Thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Guys, my pleasure. Thanks. Tough story, but I'm glad we could talk about it.
Thanks, Christine.
Agreed. Christine Brennan, USA Today, brings up some stuff that, I hadn't considered. Didn't know first of all, that 45% of the NFL's fan base are women, which is, that's a pretty high number.
It's a very high number.
Yeah. I was also thinking a little bit, she brought it up. We didn't bring it up in the first block when we were talking about this. The potential implications of, well, the Colin Kaepernick story, the Eric Reid story, and that is still an ongoing legal proceeding. The Kaepernick one is closed. Mm-hmm. And the NFL, I think, understandably decided to settle on that thing. You don't think that this would be a very nervous moment for the NFL?
If I was Colin Kaepernick's lawyers, I would be very, very interested in seeing more emails, more of those hundreds of thousands of emails. Just thinking, you know, that if the Reid thing came up, I'm guessing Colin Kaepernick's name's in there somewhere.
You got to figure.
You got to figure. I can't imagine a world in which the NFL will try and shine the light of day on this, because the tendrils are going to go all over the place.
Yes.
They will not be able to control it. They're not going to do that.
No, but so then how does it happen? Because this was a private investigation, right? This was done in-house by in-house, or somebody that was hired to perform an in-house investigation. The NFL is under no legal obligation.
None.
To give us anything. They gave us the things that they wanted to give us. They exposed the guy they wanted to expose. It's just, it's hard to know where this thing goes. And it's pretty clear why Roger Goodell didn't stand up and say, I know this was confidential, but look at this John Gruden stuff. One, there's probably legal implications.
Correct.
There.
Yes.
And two, in that forum, he might have to actually answer the question that he is under no obligation to answer. Hey, what about the rest of the emails?
Exactly.
Where today he can say, we never wanted any of those emails exposed. You weren't supposed to see any of this. And boy, John Gruden sure is a scumbag, but you know what? We didn't tell you that.
But you'd have to be, assuming that this is not just the work of a lone inside whistleblower, et cetera, et cetera. You'd have to be incredibly naive to think that you could just nip this in the bud here. We're going to get rid of John Gruden because, you know, he's a scumbag and we hate him. And we're going to force the Raiders to get rid of him. And then that'll be it.
I can't imagine being that stupid to think that would be the case. But then again, it's like, I want to see them. The majority of people that are paid attention to the story, I got to figure, also want to see them. But what do we do other than say, we want to see them? And the NFL saying, sorry, we closed this. Where were you months ago when we divulged the 650,000 emails? We didn't put this out there.
Yeah, and this is an internal investigation, and they're with the confidentiality pledge, and we are under no obligation to show this to anybody, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, like, you know, the counter argument would be, well, it's the argument Christine made. If it starts hurting their bottom line, they might feel differently. But I don't see how any way you can contain it, Ben. You cannot, and that would be the terrifying thing for them.
Yeah, and maybe if it wasn't a whistleblower, a lone whistleblower alerting the world to John Gruden, maybe now there will be a whistleblower who is privy to some of the content of the rest of the 650,000 emails. Again, I keep saying it because it's an absurd number of emails, and the possibility and probability of that, of making somebody or exposing somebody and what type of a person they are is extremely high. But now maybe it emboldens somebody who knows the dirty details of Daniel Snyder, and there's something in there that can make him not just pay a $10 million fine or go away for a couple months, but that'll make him go away forever.
Yes.
And maybe that person now, after seeing this and people wanting it, and knowing that they will be lauded as a hero, maybe now it's their time to step forward.
We'll see, right? Yeah. Like, let's start with Dan Snyder. Because, you know, he's the guy that got fined $10 million. Yeah. I'm sure they had a reason for doing that.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, God. Doesn't seem like a great dude. All right. It's great to have hockey back. The NHL returns tonight. Penguins and Lightning from Tampa as the Lightning raise their Stanley Cup banner to the rafters. We will talk to David Amber, who's in the building. He's going to be in this studio in mere moments of the NHL on Sportsnet. That's next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.